This morning, first of all, thank you very much for coming out today. We're going to have Sam begin with some opening remarks about transactions and related yesterday's deadline, and then we'll be happy to open it up for some questions.
Let's go, Sam.
Everybody good?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Thanks, everyone, for being here. Obviously, another important day for our franchise and the sort that's important for us to all talk about. These are big decisions. They happen. We only have a few big decision moments throughout the year. Sometimes in the NBA, things sort of come down to the last bit. And I think yesterday was one of those. I think I read. I'm looking at the flurry of transactions around the league as well. But I think I read 37 NBA players changed hands yesterday. I mean, 8 or 9% of the league that moved, and so you see lots and lots of action. A lot of our action all happened in the last 10 minutes, and I think that happened around the league as well. The league told us that many of the transactions were all in the last few minutes. But because of that deadline, it spurs action. And so it spurs action around the league, and it spurs people to call, and it particularly spurs action for a team like us, where one of the ways that we're building our team is to try to transact with other teams and to try to help other teams to solve their problems and to help other teams with the issues they have and to try to be good partners in that way, which is why you've seen so many transactions that we've done as a way to try to build our future. Before we get into the transactions themselves, though, I think it's important that the reality of sort of how we make decisions and the reality of how we think about things and the reality of how we talk about things, I think is different than the perception sometimes. I wish our fans could see like how many nights that Brett Brown and I are the last two people to leave Wells Fargo Center after our games and after we've talked for hours on end about the way to make our team better and what we see in our team and the way our player development could be tweaked in a certain way or the way in which we might target players with a particular set of skills. Like I think the perception sometimes is that it's very different than that, and that there are sets of people that are on different paths, or that we're focused on different goals, and that it's just not the case at all. I think we're all focused on the same thing: like how do we build something like really special? How do we build something that can win at the highest level, which is rare. It's rare in Philadelphia. It's rare around the NBA. And how do you get all the way there? How do you get all the way there? And how do you have the fortitude not to take the shortcuts? We talk about that a lot, and I think that's important on a day like yesterday when you have to make a decision, and you have to make a decision even in over the last few weeks, or in this case, some of our biggest decisions we had to make over the last 24 hours or so. Let's talk about a few of those. Let's talk about a few, maybe in the order in which they happened. The first one was a deal we did with Denver, and is exactly the kind of deal that we've been out looking at and we've been out transacting throughout the year, which is ways in which we might use our cap space to help other teams in ways that they might help us for our future. And so we agreed, after much back and forth, to take JaVale McGee if, in fact, they would include the Oklahoma City first. That first could transact this year. I would say it's unlikely. We put odds on that. You could put your own odds on that. Oklahoma City is a really good team and coming fast. But it could transact this year. But if not, it will roll to next year. It's protected 1 to 18 this year and 1 to 15 largely thereafter. That's exactly the kind of deal that we have been out looking to do. And we looked at other deals that were in similar ranges. We looked at deals much smaller. We looked at deals much bigger. This time last year, we did very similar deals. We took on Eric Maynor and we took on Byron Mullins and we picked up seconds. This year, we took on JaVale McGee and picked up a first. But the same kinds of things that we're doing. Part of the reason we're doing this is it became clear to us, in part because of the way we're building our team, that we were the lone buyer. We were the lone buyer in this market, and that would give us some advantage, and that might be the last opportunity to be the lone buyer for contracts like that for next year's space. And we have the flexibility to do it because we've been disciplined about it. And we have the flexibility to be able to do that in a way that a lot of teams can't. So that's one. Two, but easily the biggest decision, is the transaction with Michael, which is not fully final. We had the trade call very late last night. Now the players sort of go to their respective cities, have physicals and the like. The deal ended up being a three-team trade. For a moment there, it looked as if it could have been even bigger, but largely for sort of salary cap reasons for pieces to match and to move around. But it ended up being a three-team trade. And it was a big one. And one that obviously we had to talk about and we had to all agree about and we had to really think through because it's material. We have great respect for Michael. We picked him here and in my first draft here. He's someone that I'm very fond of personally. He sort of burst onto the stage in a big way, you know, with a strip and a dunk and hanging on the rim at Wells Fargo against Miami, right? And just out of the gates early. And played great and we're proud of him for that. And from that moment, like people have called and assumed we might move him and assumed that maybe they could get their hands on him and we're trying to do it. And we said the same thing every time, like we're not interested in moving him, we like him. And the only way we would ever move him is if somebody blew us away. And so we'd rejected offer after offer over the last year or more. But something came along. And the thing that came along we think is really, really interesting and is really scarce. And it's that pick from the Lakers. Those picks do not move around very much. It is almost impossibly hard to get your hands on a pick that at least has the chance to be a high lottery pick. It's very rare that they move, and because of that, that made us consider it, and in the end, made us decide that it was the right thing to do to move our program forward. And then lastly, was the deal for Isaiah Cannon. So KJ McDaniels, many teams had come looking at as well, and we had said the same. We had said we're happy to keep him. We'll have the flexibility to keep him. Like it's not something we're looking to get off of, and he's played well for us. But people continue to make offers and there became a time when the offers got interesting enough, and then particularly post the Michael trade when we were in need of a point guard, that trade became interesting. So KJ was picked to the 32nd pick this year. Isaiah Cannon was picked with the 34th pick 2 years ago, and we received the lesser of Denver and Minnesota, which as of today is Denver, and as of today would be the 38th or 39th pick, but we'll see. So one way to think about it is we traded KJ, who we're proud of, and we're proud of how he played for us in his brief time here, in the mid-30s, and we traded it for a mid-30s in the past that can help us now, including next week, and we traded it for a mid-30s in the future that will be able to help us in the future. In the end, we felt like that was a trade we should do, and that one came down to literally the last 4 or 5 minutes. Okay, I'll open it up for questions.
Sam, with Michael and with Brett, there was improvement going on. Pace was what you keyed on last year, number one there. Defense this year, you've gotten as high as 12. Brett has said a lot of that goes right through Michael. Now he's gone, you're going to have somebody else where he's going through. Where does that leave Brett? You know, I mean, it looks like it's a rebuild again at that position, and he's got 2 years left. Is he in the future of this whole thing? Past that 2 years?
I think Brett and I are very much aligned on this. We're very much aligned on the importance of the point guard position and how key it is to the way we want to play and how key it is to the NBA. I mean, you look around and point guards are increasingly important in the NBA. This is a decision he and I were very much aligned on. To your point, a lot of our success to date and maybe changing the style of play and that sort of success, Michael's been a big part of, and now the onus is on us again to find a set of players to bring in, whether it's the ones that are flying into Philadelphia today, or the ones that we find over the next several months, or the ones that we bring in this summer or beyond to be able to keep progressing on that front.
Sam, with Drew, you traded a 23-year-old All-Star point guard, and now you traded 23-year-old Rookie of the Year point guard. What are you looking for in a point guard?
I think what we're looking to do is not build up just a point guard or not to solidify in sort of a linear way just one position. Okay, now that one's good. Now we'll move on to another one, or this one player, and we're set there, and we'll move on and add to. What we're looking to do is like build something that can win deep and that can go deep into May and even into June. And to do that, it will require us to make tough decisions and require us to be comfortable with uncertainty and to be comfortable with like what might happen and to know that while we talk about these protected picks, I think sometimes people hear protected picks and they think not now, like that means it won't come right now. when the odds are it's very likely to not come now, but it may well come in the future. And that sort of volatility is interesting, and that sort of volatility is something that we have to think about.
Sam, is
next year? Go ahead, Tom.
I was going to say, is the plan kind of to start trying to be competitive, if you will, and addressing more of the needs starting this off season, if you will?
I think our plan is just the same, is to bring the best pipeline of players together that we can, and to build from there. But that's we have to keep our eye on the ball of bringing the single best set of players together. And to your point, like even this year, so two players moved, and both material, but I think you can also look around at our team and say, hey, there's a set of players here together that you could easily imagine could be here for quite some time. And so, and those players are different than they were even a year ago. Like right now, I think people look at our team and they look at Joel and Nerlens and Jeremy and Robert and a number of our other guys, and they say, oh, okay, like those guys could easily be a part of the Sixers future for several years. And then people also are realistic when they look around the league and they say, maybe things will change, who knows? But those are names. Those names I just listed wouldn't have been on any of our minds other than Nerlens, at this time last year.
What do you say to the fans who bought into what you were doing, this plan, and now you trade a cornerstone of what they thought was part of the plan? What do you say to them?
The feedback I've received from our fans, even already, and it's only been a day, is that they understand that what we're trying to do is just trying to build something great, and that may require making tough decisions, and that they understand that the way we see the world is to have a broad set of options, because good decisions will come from a broad set of options, and to be willing to make the tough calls when we say if we have something, but we have something that we think will move our program forward even more so, then we'll do it. And then we'll do it. And I'll say this too, that we'll do it unblinkingly. That it's so critical to get from where we are to where we want to go for us to be willing to take smart risks when we see them. I think in the same way that we were willing to take with Drew, to John's question, that was not an easy decision either, and willing to take one, and then and be willing to say, all right, how do we find the next set of guys that could move us forward?
How will you know when you're there?
I will all know. We'll all know.
Because it seems like this is happening a lot. Like you're developing something and then you trade away a piece. So how will you know?
I think if you look back at history, what you'd say, if anything is happening a lot, is that we're getting more. We're getting more and more interesting players, and we're getting more and more interesting pieces that we can add to our teams. I'll say on that front, I almost said the word there, more and more interesting assets in relation to our future picks. There's been a trope around that lately that I hate, and I'll try to correct it today, and it won't fully correct, but I'll at least be on the record about it. I have never in my life called one of our players an asset. Never. Never, never, never. Like, our guys are here, and they're here in our player development program with our coaches every day, busting their hump to remind the world or show the world that they're NBA players and that they belong. We do talk a lot about assets in relation to our future picks, and we talk a lot about assets in relation to our cap space and things that we can trade and things that we can use that are attractive to other teams. We talk about that a lot, but we do not talk about that among our 15 players.
Sam, are you more attracted to assets than you are what is shown to you on a daily basis?
We are. We're really focused on how do we find greatness, and sort of greatness from a team level, and then greatness at an individual player level, and we're looking for that every day. So the thing that we ask ourselves every day, we ask ourselves, you know, whether it's Brett's effort chart and after every 10 games, or whether it's in a small conference room at Wells Fargo after a game, is like, what elements of greatness did we see tonight in our own players, and other players that we saw, and the way maybe the game might have shifted, and the way that situation happened, and some underneath out of bounds play, we're looking for that sort of grade.
So what about Michael?
How much did KJ's contract factor into trading?
I'll answer them both. Which one first?
How much did KJ's contract factor into his being traded, like assignability?
Yeah, it's not a big part of it. One of the nice parts about the flexibility that we've built ourselves is we'll have the flexibility to sort of do whatever we want. So I wouldn't say that's a big part of it at all.
D. Human element, please. Does a human element ever?
Trade deadlines are always hard, and I think they're hard and hard for most of us in this room to truly empathize with. To imagine your boss calls and says you're doing a largely similar job in an entirely different city, and there's a flight tonight. And you don't have any options. I think we look at our players and we know they're well compensated, and we know they get to be a professional athlete and live out their own dreams that way. But it's always hard.
What about Michael that says that in less than 2 years he's worth less than what might be a top five pick next year, or what might very well be a picking the teams a year after that or the year after that, when you don't even know who's in the draft next year?
Yeah, I think this is sort of, John, to your question, like, is how you think about uncertainty. And do you think about uncertainty as it's scary and it's something to be afraid of? Or do you think about it as, do you try to look at it and say, where are there opportunities there that could make our team better? And to your point, where are there places in which you end up worse, and that doesn't work. It's not about Michael at all. I think Michael has a very bright future in this league, and I think we'll do quite well, and we wish him the best. It's still necessary for someone to look at the tough decisions that we have to make to try to move our program forward.
When you assign the probabilities for conveyance of these picks that you've acquired, do you think that the top 10 protected pick from Miami got more likely that it'll be conveyed when they made the deal with Phoenix yesterday? And when you look at the other pick, the Lakers pick, what's your ballpark feeling about conveyance there?
So I'll tell you gut feels. We have some sophisticated techniques, but to your point, like a big trade happens and Goran Dragic goes to Miami, and things obviously change in a certain direction. I think my guess is the Lakers pick is very unlikely to convey this year, for a whole host of reasons. My guess is the Oklahoma City pick, I would give it loosely 30-70 odds of conveying this year. I think it's much more likely to convey next year, and I think the Miami pick is increasingly likely to convey.
When looking at a guy like Michael, and even like guys that you might be able to acquire in the future, how much does their fit with a guy like Joel Embiid factor into your overall evaluation of their value?
We try to be careful not to to sort of hone in too much on any one thing and say, okay, we will forever play this style or this way or around this set of players. But to your point, yes, it is a factor of how each piece fits with the others. And obviously with a team like ours that does have change, and a team, by the way, it's not a team like ours that we're particularly trying to change. It's a team at the bottom. It's a team near the bottom that all the teams near the bottom are undergoing lots of change, and you should demand that in some way. You should demand some change from the teams at the bottom in an effort to get out of the bottom and to get to and to not just even get to somewhere slightly interesting or somewhere less painful, but to get to the top. So you see that a lot with other teams that are sort of in our range right now. But yes, Derek, to your point, it's a factor of how all of them played together. We factored that in when we thought about Joel and with Nerlens and Michael, and we'll think about that now with the players that we have, with the next set of players that we might bring in.
Yeah, some of the fans wonder if like a deal like the Michael deal sort of delays the process, but is it more of a big picture thing from your point of view, that sort of temporary sort of setbacks versus potential gains? Is that how you're looking at it?
What we look at is how do we add to what we're doing in a way that gets us closer to our goal? I sort of mentioned this earlier. We don't think of it that it will necessarily be linear. That every year you will add 5 wins, and after 10 years you will get to 50. Right? Like that's not the way we sort of think about the world. We think that it comes in fits and starts, and you have to be prepared to. to put yourself in a position that you might be able to take big leaps.
Do you feel the need to reach that goal before Brett's out of here? I mean, is there any, you know, he's got 2 years left. That's coming up quick, and this process is longer than that. Where does he fit in?
Brett is a really trusted partner for me, a really, really trusted partner. And I think the last few days, actually, are another test. We've been through a lot of these already in our short tenure, but another test of that, and one in which I feel really good about. That some of what happened yesterday is because of what is for the betterment of our program, in my judgment, and all of our judgments, but fair to say, largely in my judgment. At the end of the day, I'm the one accountable for these. But some of the value that was created, let's not have lost. Is a credit to Brett and the coaching staff that he's put together, and the player development work with the players that we bring in. We work really hard to look around the world to find great players to bring in, and most of them aren't household names, and I understand that most people they're not very excited about Robert Covington, and they didn't spend a lot of time at Murray State looking at Isaiah Cannon, and they didn't feel their heart race when Isaiah Cannon was at the 34th pick, just one pick away from our pick at the 35th, and then got nabbed at the 34th pick, and we traded out of 35 and traded back and back and back and back, back and out and back and out and back and out. But at the same time, like, we try to bring those players in, and then from there try to put them into the development part of our program, which is big. We talk about that a lot. Brett talks about it a lot, and it's all true. Like, a lot of what our program is going to be about is player development, and sports science is really critical for us. And he and I both have a really defensive mindset. Like, he talks defense all the time, and I tell him, like, when you hear me talk about players, I say all the time, we like players that play on both ends. We like players who care about both ends. It is half the game. It might be more.
See, 18 and 19-year-olds are very different than 25, 26-year-old guys who understand the business aspect of this league. You've got a team basically of kids who are just, right, how do you explain to a 19-year-old who's been working, sweating with a Michael Carter Williams, and suddenly you tell him, well, yeah, he was a rookie of the year, but he's gone. How do you convince them that they're not the next one, that if they don't develop in 2 years, that they could be...
I did that just yesterday. I spent some time on the phone with several of our players, many of whom are quite young, as you said, and we talked about that, and we talked about what it is we're trying to do. When they all came in one by one and we talked to them, we were very honest with them about that we have a set of people around here, and I often say men. We have largely men, not entirely men, but we say we have a set of men around here that will pour themselves into you every day. And we don't even ask that you meet us halfway. We ask that you just take one step in our direction. And you want to shoot at night, somebody will be there. And if you want to shoot and nobody will meet you, say the word, and I will solve it. Because you're like, there. We think about sort of our time, like, our players' time is like really scarce, and their chance to like make the best of their career is really short for a lot of them, particularly some of the guys that sign on 10 days or some of the guys that come in briefly. Like, they have sometimes just one shot to make it, and we say we'll give you everything we've got, but at the same time, our goals are not about just you, right? You could be a larger part of our picture, but our goals are to build something special for the city, and we would love for you to be a part of that. But there are no promises. Our promises is we'll meet you every day. We'll try to make you better. Every day we'll try to lift you up. But that's it. That's the end of the agreement.
What's your general opinion about the quality and depth of the upcoming draft?
I feel pretty good about it, actually. This time of year, personnel evaluators start to get a little skittish and start to downplay expectations about the draft and how good it is. I sort of like it, though. I've been reasonably impressed. You know, last year was thought of as legendary, and then typically expectations dropped a little bit. I don't think it's quite as good as last year, but it's good. It looks better than the year prior to me.
Do you worry about the new television contract?
When will the number of wins matter to you?
We're focused on how do you put the building blocks in place that have a chance to compete in May. And those teams win in the high 50s. They don't win in the teens. And they don't add two or three wins a year, and they don't add a win a month for a little while and to try to get to where they're going. But they get all the way to the 50s, and they get there usually on the backs of great players. We are still, as much as I've talked about how we make decisions, as much as I've talked about our organizational goals and our player development, is a players driven league still. And so we will when we have a set of players that can carry us deep, that's the only way. That's the only way to get to where we're going.
You have a guy like,
but there's no timetable on that, or even a rough estimate on how long that can be. At some point your fans have to say, well, it's 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, 10 years.
I think our fans do the same thing what we do here, as they look at our set of players and they think about, how good is he? How much better will he get? How much better? How about the next guy? How good could he be? And they turn on their television and they look at college basketball and they think about that guy and how good will he be? And when those guys are good enough, then they hope like the rest of us. I don't think there's any other way to look at it other than that.
What are your intentions for LaVale McGee? I think the assumption is out there that he's going to pass through.
We'll see. I force myself to be open-minded to that sort of thing, and so we'll see what happens. But it's fair to say that JaVale's in a situation where he may well have a fresh start here, which would be great for him. But he was moved in part because of the pick that came with.
You have a guy like Jeremy.
When you look at the this draft coming up, with the new television contract, there is some financial incentive for kids to maybe be two and done instead of one and done this year. So a lot of people that fans and people are speculating are going to enter this draft are freshmen who might not enter this draft because there could be a $10 million difference when that new salary cap kicks in 2016-17. Do you think that can affect who might come out in this draft? And if so, how does that affect your plans?
Fair to say we spent a lot of time with the collective bargaining agreement and with college basketball and with all the financial ramifications of that. Well, I wouldn't speculate right now on who might enter the draft or who wouldn't. And if we got into specifics, we'd get in trouble if we tried. I'll go back to Bob's question. I think the draft looks pretty strong.
You have a guy like Jeremy Grant who improved his shooting dramatically.
Can you say it again?
You have a guy like Jeremy Grant who improved his shooting dramatically, and a guy like Michael who maybe didn't make the progress from college. How much can you rely on shooting improving, and how much is it more, if he does improve, then it's a great value that he fell that far?
Yeah, I think even a harder question is, when do you know? When do you know when they've really improved? So one of the examples we talked about a lot, and I think I talked about publicly, was Jeremy and KJ, right? And maybe as a harder example on a day when KJ's not here, but it, not as if it's tied into that, but it's useful. I think KJ comes out and shoots great. Jeremy misses most of camp, and I think Jeremy started 0-for-13 or something from three. Then KJ struggled to shoot, but I think we'll be fine and we'll shoot it fine. And then Jeremy had a January where he almost couldn't miss. It felt like we try to tune all that out. It's like, not only does that last shot not matter, what if the last 100 or 200 shots don't matter, right? What if it has to be a much longer run for you to actually really know the difference of this guy's a 31% shooter and this guy's a 38% shooter? It might take actually more time than that. And so we spent a lot of time and a lot of effort to try to get a read on that early. But it's fair to say it takes some amount of time.
Sam, at some point do you expect or hope to sign a significant free agent potentially down the road?
Yeah, three ways to improve your team: via the draft, via trade, via free agency. I think historically, all the best teams have used all three of those, and I think we will too.
But this summer, it might not necessarily be part of it.
Timing-wise, I'm not sure. I mean, we'll approach it the way we approach everything. We'll try to give ourselves lots of options. We'll try to be opportunistic. We'll try not to be dogmatic about we're only doing this or we're only doing that. We'll look at those and think about the trade-offs of each one. But I'm not sure just yet.
If you were able to get some roster flexibility, would you consider adding another point guard
or do you think you're going to run with what you have?
Yes, we have. So we have a lot of opportunity available, and we could use the help. So Isaiah Cannon, I think, will play for us. That said, Tony Roden is out, and so Tim Frazier, I think, is on his way here if he's not here already, and we'll sign a 10-day for now. But I think it's fair to say we'll continue to look. We looked at Larry Drew.
Do you have a 15th spot as we're sitting here?
We have flexibility to create a roster spot if we need one, and so we'll continue to look. It is important for me personally, and one of the things that I would like to accomplish is to find someone to invest in our backup point guard space during the rest of the season. So we'll see if we can find someone. We did this last year, for example, as we looked for guys, but we were largely looking to fill a third point guard spot, and eventually we settled on Casper Ware, Casper Ware plus our flexibility eventually became a second round pick. And eventually that second round pick may well become the next Jeremy Grant or KJ McDaniels. And so on the same day that Casper Ware flew from Italy and folks weren't sure who he was or why he was here, how he fit into some larger plan, that's an example that it's not as if we've fully reaped all the benefits of that yet. But some things you have to try to think ahead of how you could piece those things together.
But he's not a backup right now because there's no point guard.
Isaiah Cannon is our point guard.
Yes.
Yes, Isaiah Cannon.
Is he here?
Isaiah Cannon is part of the trade and flying here and will physically. I don't think he'll play tonight. I don't think the trade won't clear tonight. There's a lot of players, three teams. It won't clear tonight. Usually it takes a day or two to transact. But Isaiah Cannon will play, and I suspect he will play quite well. He is. I don't want to oversell him, and on a day in which our starting point guard leaves, I don't want to put too much pressure on him. He is an interesting prospect. He is anything but a throw-in. He's someone we chased in the draft with similar zeal to chasing other players, and someone we have high hopes for. He played with Robert Covington, as I mentioned before, last year. He's played fine in his limited stints in the NBA, and he's had limited stints for a reason because he's on a very good team. He wouldn't be the first player at the Sixers to come from a good team and to surprise if he stepped into our lineup.
Sam, how much easier did it make the trade when you factor in that Tim Frazier in his first game he had 11 assists? You know, when Michael Carter Williams was out against Cleveland, you had Larry Drew and you guys went from 21-3. How much easier does that factor in with this?
Decisions like these are really long-ranging, Keith. They matter over several years. They matter over how you think things will play out and what optionality you'll have to make things play out. So a particular game or a particular set of guys that might have come through, we would have factored in almost as much. And similarly, last year, like we were in this position, we were in this room last year, and we had lost several in a row. I think we'd lost 9 in a row. And people asked then, like, how much did that play a factor into how you thought about things? And we said very little. Like, we were in a funk, and it wasn't a lot of fun with the team we had. But those nine games seem long ago already to all of us, right? And we have to be focused on where we're trying to go and how best to get there.
But it doesn't show that you don't need like an elite point guard. I mean, to make this thing work, I mean, as long as you have Joel and some other pieces, you don't think you need an all-star type point guard?
We'd like all-stars anywhere we could get them, Keith, anywhere. And I'd said before, I think point guard's an important position, which is what makes a decision like this hard. But all positions are important at some level. I think there's a particular premium on a few right now. But no, I wouldn't think to your question, no.
There's been so much talk of time and when is it going to end all that. Just contractually, where are you time-wise? How long? I don't know your contract situation. How long is your contract here for? And
you might not believe this, Bob.
You don't know.
No, I know. it's not the sort of thing we focus on. It's not. What a disservice I would do to the city and to the Sixers if that was the first question I asked myself before I made a decision. Like, I want to be a steward of our franchise for our fans and for our owners. I want to put us in a place where we make good decisions as often as we can, and that's an important way to say it. We'll, we will we will not bet $1,000 on every single draft pick. We also have them by the bushel full, in part because of that, because we don't have any hubris that we will get them all right. We're not certain that we have an enormous edge over anybody else. In some places, we may not have an edge at all, and that's okay. It's a hard league with 30 sets of competitive teams that are trying to all clamor to the top of the same mountain, and most of them have been doing it for decades to climb and to build a team to a certain place. So we try really, really hard to keep focused on that, and any focus on something as small as that, no.
Considering what happened yesterday, was it unfortunate on Tuesday that the image got out about next year's program with Michael being on there with Joel and Nerland? Or is there an explanation of how that happened? Was it just a bad leak?
I would say the opposite, John. Like the trade deadline's on Thursday, and the decisions happened. The decisions were made 1 p.m. maybe, and everything actually appeared to happen with about 5 or 6 minutes to go before the deadline. So that's 2:54 p.m. Eastern time. So I'm not even sure what might have happened prior to that. But they would have had to have been pretty all knowing before that to know how to do anything differently.
And do you believe more in what you don't know, which are assets, than you do in watching development, which takes time?
I'm not trying to dodge your question. I'm trying to understand it.
It's hard for people.
I'll say it maybe this way. I believe a lot in optionality. A lot.
Optionality.
Can you use that word? Sure. You can use all these words. I believe a lot in optionality. I believe a lot in flexibility. I believe a lot in making a decision as late as you possibly can to gain as much information as you can. We talk a lot about being a triple option quarterback. Hold the ball in the fullback's gut until you read the defensive end. Hold it as long as you possibly can. That is really important, in part because you know so much more. Because you know, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you know exactly what you knew before. Sometimes the world changed and you know a lot more than you did.
What did you know about Michael that's different now?
Oh, a lot. We've had, I don't know, 500 days together, something. We know a lot. We know a lot more.
But in those 500 days, what changed from him being a person you said that you thought this thing could really grow with to a guy who in less than two seasons basically had to go?
I wouldn't characterize it that way at the end at all. Michael only left here because there was a way to move our program forward. Not for any other reason, and he did nothing wrong, and has it is possible for two things to be really valuable, both Michael and something else, and I believe that.
When you assess the value of different components of an offense,
yeah,
where do you rank being able to shoot from range?
Yes,
given the fact that they give you an extra point.
Yeah, shooting is an important part of the game, and I think increasingly important. I think you hear a lot of talk about the three, and you hear a lot of talk about. Maybe the way teams are built, but I was watching in June. I think most of our fans were. You watch games in June. There's a lot of the threes being shot, and there's a lot of games being won in the balance based on makes and misses.
So with what you had on the floor right now, even looking forward, did you feel that was a component of your offense that really, really needed to be addressed?
Yeah, over time, I do think shooting is something that will for us to be among the best teams. All of the best teams are both strong offensively and defensively, and these days all the best teams are really strong from behind the line as well.
Did Michael's development as a shooter, was that part of the thing that factored into
William? I don't think so. I think he was doing fine on that front, because we sort of take a humble approach to that, which is for all of our players the same, which is like get in the gym and shoot. And Michael showed a real proclivity to do that. He's a really hardworking guy, from a really great family that really loves basketball, that's basketball crazed. He spent a lot of late nights in our gym. Sometimes there have been some note as of late about which of our players are here in the gym at night or not, and that's one of the places I'm sure we've spent more than people have ever spent at PCOM is late night security. Our guys are here a lot, and they're here a lot in part because they want to get better. They're here a lot because a lot of them live close to our facility and want to come over. But there are a lot of players in here very late at night.
Yeah, can you update on what's the status? Kirilenko, has there been any changes?
The question was on Kirilenko's status. Andre is still on our team and is still part of the suspended list. And so as part of that, he sort of doesn't take up a roster spot for us.
What is the status of the facility in Cameron?
Things are moving along there. We remain really excited about that. I'm still hearing it's going to open in the summer of 16, which would be fantastic. I'm a step away from the construction manager, so I don't know when that happens exactly. But we're excited about it. The facility is going to be fantastic, and fantastic in a way. Again, people hear a facility, and I think they think about the recruiting visit with a free agent and flying in with a helicopter and doing that. And over time, there may be some of that. That's not what it's about. It's about our players coming in late at night and shooting. And it's about our players being in our gym, not 2 hours a day or two and a half or three, but more and more and more, and trying to find a place that's welcoming and inviting and has all that they need year-round, all 365 days of the year, so that that Philadelphia is the place that they live, so Philadelphia is the place that they train and that they play pickup and they get better at their craft, whether they're brand new and here on a 10-day or trying to claw their way into the league or they're a big-time Sixer.
Is reset a bad word, the wrong word, to look at what happened yesterday and where you are now?
I think where we are now is down the same path we've been trying to go down, which is how do we set ourselves up to be really, really successful. That's all.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate your time. Thanks.
Sounds good.